Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
My name is Susie Haynes, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Saturday, October 8th, 2022. West Texas Intermediate jumps to five-week high, tops $92. Concerns over supply, OPEC reductions, drove oil prices to increase by 16%. By Mella McEwen. Supply concerns took the driver's seat this week and drove crude prices to five-week highs. Plans announced by the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and allied nations to cut output by 2 million barrels a day beginning in November provided a sharp boost to prices. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange jumped more than 16% this week, rising all 5 days of the trading week. Trading began with a $4.14 climb Monday and an additional $2.89 Tuesday. WTI ended the week by rising $4.19 or 4.7% to close at $92.64 per barrel, up from $79.49 at last Friday's close. The posted price ended the week at $89.12, according to the Plains All-American. Natural gas prices rose 3 of 5 trading days, but got the week off to a rough start by falling 29.6 cents to $6.47 per MCF. Prices then recovered, climbing 36.7 cents to $6.837 per MCF and approached $7 per MCF Wednesday by adding another 9.7 cents to $6.93 and 4 cents Thursday to $6.97. Prices, however, ended the week by dropping 22 cents to close at 6.748 per MCF, down from 6.766 at last Friday's close. In my opinion, OPEC is balancing the supply side of the supply and demand equation, Mickey Cargile of Cargile Investment Management told the Reporter Telegram by email. There is excess oil on the market today as evidenced by the declining commodity price. I believe OPEC is attempting to minimize the price fluctuations that create the traditional boom and bust of the oil cycle. Cargile added, I certainly do not see the actions as hostile towards the U.S. The reduction in quotas also provides a buffer to increase supply when demand increases, offsetting what would otherwise create a spike in prices. In the best case, crude stabilizes between $85 and $100. Edward Moya, senior market analyst, The Americas, with Oanda, wrote in his daily newsletter that prices could rise even higher. OPEC showed their cards this week, and that will keep oil markets very tight as we approach winter. OPEC has done whatever it takes and is now awaiting to see what the reaction will be from world leaders. The risks of $100 oil are easily back on the table, and if it is a cold winter, we could see $110 before the end of the year, he wrote. MISD candidates talk safety, discipline at forum. League of Women Voters event draws consensus on desire to shore up security. By Stuart Doreen. Schools in Midland and Odessa have been plagued by fighting, campus disruptions, criminal acts, and the overall lack of discipline. In September, community leaders even held a town hall at the Martin Luther King Jr. Center to address the situation at Legacy Freshman High School. Security was an issue discussed Thursday night at the League of Women Voters Candidate Forum held at Midland College. While a question asked appeared to address the security issues forced on school districts in the wake of school shootings, specifically the horrific acts last spring in Uvalde, more attention was given to discipline issues that candidates said expose holes in the district's security structure and show the lack of consequences for offenders. Carrie McNeil, who is running for school board in District 6, said she was horrified by a video sent out this week of a fight at Midland Freshman where kids were clobbering one another and treating the incident like a concert. We have to reevaluate our policies and how we punish kids, McNeil said. There is no blowback. They run the schools. If we don't get the attention of children and their parents, nothing is going to change. McNeil's opponent for the open seat in the Western District, Sarah Burleson, agreed there was a need to look at discipline and school operations protocols. In District 5, generally North Central and Northeast Midland, John Trischetti III and Brandon Hodges are competing. Trischetti, the current occupant of the school board seat, said the district needs to continue to pour in resources for officers, and when it came to discipline, make sure teachers feel supported. We have to create environments and cultures on campus where students can go to campus and learn, Trischetti said. Hodges said Midland ISD needs to bring in safety and security experts who have the knowledge of what keeps a campus safe. He said that expertise will help the district keep its campuses safer from a would-be shooter or improve the situations for students impacted by the straight-to-video disruptions. He said certain students don't need a hug, but to be separated from the herd, and then must earn the right to join other students with proper behavior. If teachers cannot have control over their classrooms, there is nothing they can do, Hodges said. District 3, generally central to Southwest Midland, also features an incumbent, Tommy Bishop, trying to fend off a challenge from Reagan Hinojos. Bishop talked about the district's efforts to hire a security coordinator with 10 years of experience with Homeland Security. Bishop also said the district is updated regularly on how campuses fare when it comes to tests to breach security efforts. Hinojos talked about how Midland ISD trails Ector County ISD when it comes to the number of officers. He said 18 officers is not enough for Midland ISD's 40 campuses, and also questions why there wasn't a juvenile justice alternative program to help handle the criminals committing crimes on campus. He said, as it stands now, they are thrown in Midland Alternative Program and left to hit the streets. Hinojos called for a holistic way to treat kids who didn't come from certain homes. Other topics addressed during the forum included the MISD calendar, school bonds, schools of choice, and responsibilities of a board member. Midlanders to bring Frio's Gourmet Pops to town, by Ben Schaefer. When most people think of popsicle flavors, they think of the typical cherry, blue raspberry, or orange. Frio's Gourmet Pops, a popsicle truck franchise coming to Midland, includes flavors like blueberry cheesecake, blackberry ginger lemonade, and pickle. The Alabama-based gourmet popsicle franchise, with a focus on philanthropy, is being brought to the Permian Basin by Midland's Tabitha and Hector Garcia this fall. They will begin selling Frio's popsicles at a stand during events in the Permian Basin before their truck is deemed fully operational. The Garcias should receive their vehicle at the middle or end of October. As the brand's first multi-unit franchisees, the Garcias are planning to unveil their first Frio's Sweet Ride this fall, which will serve customers throughout the Permian Basin and surrounding areas, a Frio's news release stated. Hector Garcia is from Puerto Rico and served in the Air Force as a pediatrician, and Tabitha has a professional background in customer service. She is from New Mexico originally. A major focus of Frio's Gourmet Pops is philanthropy in the areas their sweet rides populate. According to a news release, each Frio's owner, or happiness hustler, pledges to donate and contribute to a local charitable partner. The Garcias will do the same. Whether it's stocking hospital freezers with free Frio's Pops for patients or donating the proceeds to those in need, Frio's goes above and beyond to give back to the communities it serves, the Frio's news release stated. City candidates talk Hogan Park at League of Women Voters Forum, by Stuart Doreen. Hogan Park came up as a focal point of the League of Women Voters Forum Thursday night at Midland College. The question asked of mayoral and District 4 candidates was about securing the remaining funds for the $50 million Hogan Park project, and does the attention there take away from investing in other parks? Hogan Park in Northeast Midland is being developed like Centennial Park was in downtown. The project is being handled like a public-private partnership with a conservancy handling the redevelopment and operations of Hogan when completed. The City of Midland has committed $10 million to the park's redevelopment. Former Mayor Jerry Morales said Thursday that during his terms as mayor, he was 100% for improving the quality of life through parks. He also said there has not been the transparency needed on where officials are going with the Hogan project, including how much money will be needed to complete the project, considering increased costs, and how much was needed for an endowment to take care of maintenance and operations moving forward. He also asked if the city's commitment could have been used to improve other parks like Reyes Mashburn. City Councilwoman Lori Blong is running against Morales for mayor and a leader of the Hogan Park Conservancy. Blong has taken a lead role not only with Hogan, but the Midland Bike Trail in Southeast Midland. She said fundraising is close to $40 million, including the $10 million donated by the city. She said a committee was started to help elevate the project after it was brought forward by city staff. In District 4, generally West Midland, Amy Stretcher Burks and Jim Garrity are competing for the open seat. Burks addressed the question about Hogan, saying she wanted to serve District 4 and would take on projects in other parts of the city if that is something her constituents thought was important. She did say it was important to maintain and take care of parks first, and said issues like mowing, trash, and graffiti can challenge an already limited city staff. Garrity said he had confidence in the leadership of the Hogan Park efforts and that public-private partnerships were the way to go with larger ticket items. He has agreed about staffing issues and told those at Midland College that as the owner of Domino's Pizza locations in Midland, he knows what it is like to deal with staffing issues. He said similar issues to Hogan could come up in District 4 if the Nueva Vista Golf Course ever becomes a green space park. Other issues talked about during the League of Women Voters Forum included how candidates would deal with the influx of younger residents in Midland, recycling, public safety, and working with other council members. Community Roundup and Calendar. Upcoming meetings, Commissioner's Court, 9 a.m. Monday, Commissioner's Courtroom, 500 North Lorraine Street, Midland City Council, 10 a.m. Tuesday, Council Chamber, City Hall, 300 North Lorraine Street. Midland County Republican Women Meeting. The Midland County Republican Women will meet from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Wednesday at Midland Country Club. Guest speakers are candidates involved in local elections on November 8th, including those involved in city and school district races. For more information, go to https://www.facebook.com/midcotxrepub-women. Calendar. Texas Size Garage Sale, Tuesday and Wednesday, 407 East Scarborough Drive. Pink in the Park, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., October 15th, Centennial Park. City of Midland Health Department, in conjunction with Familia Dental, Fall Festival and Resource Fair, 1 to 4 p.m., October 15th, Dennis Semenis Park, 2201 West Indiana Avenue. 33rd Annual Tom Arnold Memorial Fish Fry, 5 to 8 p.m., October 15th, American Legion Building, 501 Veterans Air Park Lane. Midland Northside Lions Club, 19th Annual Roar with Laughter Hilarity Review Fundraiser, 7:30 p.m., October 15th, Hispanic Cultural Center. Alzheimer's Association to End Alzheimer's, 9 a.m., October 15th, Cimarex Pavilion, 5514 Champions Drive. Visit alz.org/walk. West Texas Women's Symposium, October 19th through 20th, Bush Convention Center. Fall festivals, trunk or treats, country fairs. Midland Police Department, Candy for Cans Trunk or Treat, 6 to 8 p.m., October 21st, Hogan Park, 1201 East Wadley Avenue. Midland Fire Department, Trunk or Treat, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. October 22nd, Central Fire Station, 1500 West Wall Street. Halloween Fest, 6 to 8 p.m. October 27th, MLK Park, 2300 Butternut Lane. Midland Bible Church Country Fair, 4 to 7 p.m. October 30th, 5900 Whitman. Trunk or Treat, 5 to 7 p.m. October 30th, Wilshire Baptist Church, 801 South Bentwood Drive. Election 2022, Debate Forum Scheduled. Midland Reporter Telegram MISD Debates, October 18th, District 3, 7 p.m., District 5, 7:45 p.m., District 6, 8:30 p.m. at Carrasco Room at Midland College. All debates will be live streamed on the Reporter Telegram Facebook page. Reporter Telegram City of Midland Debates, October 20th. District 4, 7 p.m., Mayoral, 7:50 p.m. at Carrasco Room at Midland College. Both debates will be live streamed on the Reporter Telegram Facebook page. Basin PBS on October 11th, 13th, and 17th. The debates will be televised. MISD School Board from 7 to 8:30 p.m. on October 11th, Mayoral Forum from 7 to 8 p.m. on October 13th, and Midland City Council from 7 to 8 p.m. on October 17th. The Midland Republican National Hispanic Assembly will have forums on October 17th and 19th. The MISD candidates will go from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. at the Spring Hill Suites, 5716 Deauville Boulevard. The Midland City Council forums will be from 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Mayor on October 19th and from 12:30 to 1:30 p.m. for District 4. The Negro Business and Professional Women's Club of Midland on October 22nd at the MLK Junior Community Center. The forums will include judges, school board, and city council candidates at 10 a.m. and mayoral candidates at 1 p.m. Elections Office needs bilingual workers. The Midland County Election Office is looking for bilingual workers to help with early voting. Those interested and able to speak English and Spanish can give the Elections Office a call at 432-688-4890. Health events. Morgan.Tennis at MidlandHealth.org. Midland Health is offering a free support group for anyone interested in learning about diabetic and cardiovascular health. It will be held Monday, every second Monday of the month, from 6 to 7 p.m. at the First Baptist Church, 2104 West Louisiana Avenue, room D100 to 102. Call 432-221-2285 or email for more information at midlandhealth.org/COVID-19. COVID-19 bivalent vaccine clinic for anyone 12 years of age or older will be held from 3 to 4:30 p.m. Thursday at the F. Marie Hall Outpatient Center, 4214 Andrews Highway. What's up with Midland? The Blue Door, Barktoberfest, October 13th, Pottery Class, October 22nd, Scary Movie Trivia, October 27th, Christchurch Anglican, Festival of St. Francis Pet Blessing, and 5K, October 22nd. The Garlic Press, Beer Dinner, October 17th. Hispanic Cultural Center, Roar with Laughter, hosted by Midland Northside Lions Club, October 15th. Horseshoe Arena, Ducks Unlimited Banquet, Wednesday. John Party, October 13th. 7th Annual West Texas Tats and Fades Tattoo and Barber Convention, October 14th through 16th. Power of the Purse, October 27th. Cruise for a Cause Car Show, October 29th. Micromart. Bar Crawl, October 29th. Midland Beer Garden. Emo Karaoke, October 14th through 15th. Drag Night, October 22nd. Pride Center Halloween Party, October 28th. Scaraoke Contest, October 29th. Midland College, 50th Anniversary Celebration, Saturday. Midland Community Theater, A Monster Calls, October 14th through 16th. Midland Humane Coalition, Furista Gala, October 22nd. Miss Casey's Wonderland, Early Bird Christmas Tree Sale, benefiting the Field's Edge, Saturday through October 16th. Fall Open House, October 21st through 22nd. Pumpkin Patch and Photo Ops, all October. Museum of the Southwest, Midland Downtown Farmers Market, 8 a.m. to 12 noon, every Saturday. Wagner Noel Performing Arts, Divas 3, Tuesday. Teo Gonzalez and Rogelio Ramos, UNI 2 Tour, October 13th. The Fab 4, The Ultimate Tribute, October 14th. Jerry Seinfeld with special guest Mario Joyner, October 15th. Cinema Under the Stars, Hocus Pocus, October 20th. Ida Cuevas, 45th Anniversary, Yo Creo Que Es Tiempo, October 23rd. Blue October, October 27th. Jamie Johnson Live in Concert with special guest Kylie Fry, October 30th. Crime in Brief. Midland couple arrested for mistreating dog. A Midland couple was arrested after a Midland police investigation determined they failed to provide help for their injured German Shepherd, according to court documents. Willie James Kelly, 64, and Wyketta Posey, 45, were arrested on a charge of cruelty to a non-livestock animal, killing or causing serious bodily injury. Bond information was not available for the third-degree felony charge. Midland police officers were dispatched on July 28th to the Midland Animal Control in reference to an animal cruelty case. The complaint stated that a German Shepherd with a serious wound on its leg was being surrendered. The dog had a large portion of his lower right leg missing and had about 3 inches of exposed bone. MPD officers interviewed the dog's owner, Posey, and her ex-boyfriend, identified as Kelly, who stated the dog was hit by a car on April 26th. They also stated that the dog was taken to the animal hospital, where they told them he had suffered nerve damage and recommended having the leg amputated, according to the arrest affidavit. The owner stated she scheduled the appointment for the amputation, but Kelly took the dog and had him locked up where she didn't have access to him, according to the arrest affidavit. Midland Animal Shelter staff advised that the dog appeared to have been starved. During the investigation, officers determined the dog had not received a reasonable amount of medical care from Kelly and Posey. Posey has since been released from Midland County Jail. Kelly remains in custody, according to arrest records. ECISD student arrested for threatening school. Ector County ISD reported Thursday that a sixth grader at Nimitz Middle School was arrested for making threats to the school. According to the press release, the student said he would shoot up the school. He was charged with the threat or exhibition of weapon on school grounds or bus, a Class A misdemeanor. School and school district leaders will continue to treat any mention of school violence seriously and will continue to charge students criminally as well as apply school discipline if threats like this are made, the district said in a news release. Thursday's arrest followed the arrests of two students on September 29th. A Wilson and Young Middle School 8th grader was arrested after threatening to shoot a coach. Another student, an 8th grader currently at the Alternative Center, told another student he would bring a gun to school and shoot up the campus. Both were charged with threat or exhibition of a weapon on school grounds or bus, a Class A misdemeanor. Since the start of the 22-23 school year, Ector County ISD has reported over a dozen incidents that resulted in the arrests of students. MPD seeking information on theft suspect. The Midland Police Department is seeking information on a man involved in a theft. Midland police officers responded on September 24th at about 9:04 p.m. to a reported theft at the Walmart located at 4517 North Midland Drive. The man left the store with two flat-screen televisions without paying, according to Midland Crime Stoppers. If a person has any information on the suspect and it leads to an arrest, he or she will be eligible for a cash reward. Call Midland Crime Stoppers at 694-TIPS or download the Crime Stoppers app, P3 Tips, and submit an anonymous mobile tip. No caller ID is ever used, and those providing information will remain anonymous. Please reference MPD case number 22209-25300. Oil gas production taxes top $1 billion for 6th month, by Mella McEwen. A new fiscal year is underway for the state of Texas, but the trend of billion-dollar production tax collections paid by the state's oil and gas producers continues. Comptroller Glenn Heger reported in his recently released tax collections data that oil producers paid $552 million in production taxes in September, the first month of the fiscal year. That's up 41% from September 2021. Natural gas producers paid $480 million, up 91% from the previous year. The combined taxes total approximately $1.032 billion. Texas oil and gas producers have been paying $1 billion plus in production taxes since last April, when the two taxes totaled approximately $1.004 billion. Mickey Cargill of Cargill Investment Management pointed out that production taxes are reported with a delay and track the price of the underlying commodities. With commodity prices having peaked in recent weeks, he predicted tax collections will begin to decline in the coming months. The oil and natural gas industry is meeting our energy needs more responsibly than any other nation in the world, while directly funding public education, essential services, and our state's robust rainy day fund, said Todd Staples, president of the Texas Oil and Gas Association, in a statement to the Reporter Telegram. Oil and natural gas are irreplaceable in our lives, our economy, and our future. Oil and gas production taxes rank just behind sales tax and motor vehicle taxes as the largest source of tax revenue for the state. The certification of revenue estimate for fiscal year 2023 is for $6.58 billion in oil production taxes and $4.69 billion in natural gas production taxes. For fiscal year 2022, the two taxes brought in a combined $10.83 billion, 88% more than the previous high set in 2014. Oil production taxes totaled $6.36 billion, up 84.4% from fiscal year 2021 and $130 million higher than the revenue estimate. Natural gas production taxes totaled $4.47 billion, up 185% from the previous fiscal year and $9 million more than the revenue estimate. ExxonMobil told to reinstate pair of terminated employees, by Mella McEwen. Irving, the U.S. Department of Labor's Occupational Safety and Health Administration ordered ExxonMobil Corporation to immediately reinstate two employees and pay them more than $800,000 in back wages, interest, and compensatory damages. A federal whistleblower investigation found the company terminated them illegally after suspecting them of leaking information to the Wall Street Journal. In September 2020, the Wall Street Journal alleged the global oil and gas company may have inflated production estimates and the reported value of oil and gas wells in the Permian Basin. The newspaper reported ExxonMobil's assumption that drilling speed would increase substantially in the next 5 years may have been inaccurate. These assumptions were included in company filings with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission in 2019. OSHA's investigation found ExxonMobil fired two computational scientists who raised concerns about the company's use of the assumptions in late 2020. The company claimed it terminated one of the scientists for mishandling proprietary company information and the second for having a negative attitude, looking for other jobs, and losing the confidence of the company management. OSHA learned that ExxonMobil knew that one of the scientists was a relative of a source quoted in the Wall Street Journal article and had access to the leaked information. The investigation determined that the communication with the newspaper related to alleged company violations is protected activity under the Sarbanes-Oxley Act. Rig count rises to 345 in Permian by Mella McEwen. Drilling activity entered the fourth quarter of the year on a down note, with fewer rigs at work across the U.S. seeking crude or natural gas. Drillers have added rigs for 8 consecutive quarters, but the 12 added in the third quarter was the smallest increase in 2 years. Oilfield services firm Baker Hughes said its U.S. rig count, which it has released weekly since the 1940s, fell by 3 to 762, the first decline in 4 weeks, and the lowest level in a month. The count is still 229 rigs more than the 533 counted last October. The number of rigs drilling for oil dropped to 602, 169 more than the 433 reported last year. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas dipped by 1 to 158, 59 more than the 99 drilling for natural gas a year ago. Texas remained unchanged at 360 rigs, 113 more than the 247 drilling across the state last year. New Mexico also remained unchanged at 113 rigs. Oklahoma 1 and West Virginia 1 were the only producing states to see increases, while Louisiana 4 and Wyoming 1 were the only producing states to see declines. Of the major producing basins, the Permian, up 1 to 345, 79 more than 266 last year, and the Marcellus, up 1, were the only two to see increases. The Haynesville was the only basin to see a decline, dipping 1 rig. Lee County, New Mexico, continues to see the most activity among the Permian Basin counties, with 72 rigs unchanged for the week. Eddy County, New Mexico, followed with 38 rigs, also unchanged for the week. Martin County reported 34 rigs for a second week, while Midland County reported 31 rigs unchanged for the week. Reeves County, the only Permian Basin county to report a change, added 1 rig for 29 at work within county lines. Loving County held at 21 rigs, and Howard County had 20 rigs. Upton County reported 19 rigs, Glasscock 14 rigs, and Ward County 13 rigs. Enverus Foundation, part of the energy-focused software as a service firm Enverus, said its U.S. rig count fell by 13 to a total of 878 during the week ended October 5th. The count is up 1% in the last month and up 43% over the year. The average number of rigs running in the third quarter was 855 in the U.S., up 6% from the second quarter, with 320 in the Permian, up by 3% sequentially, 114 in the Gulf Coast, plus 13%, 75 in the Anadarko, plus 10%, 55 in the Appalachian, plus 4%, 42 in the Williston, plus 11%, 20 in the DJ, plus 11%, and 192 in other regions. The largest year-over-year percentage increases were in the Williston, plus 75%, Gulf Coast, plus 68%, DJ, plus 54%, and Anadarko, plus 50%. The third quarter average in the Permian was up 36% year-over-year, and Appalachia was up 28% year-over-year. The U.S. ended the third quarter with 891 active rigs, up by 42 rigs, or 5% from the end of the second quarter. The Inverness daily rig count has been changed from only rigs drilling for hydrocarbons to include other rigs, such as those drilling injection or saltwater disposal wells. So far this year, the number of rigs drilling non-hydrocarbon wells has averaged 18, including 2 rigs in the Anadarko Basin, 1 in the Appalachian Basin, 1 in the DJ Basin, 2 in the Gulf Coast, 1 in the Williston Basin, and 6 in the Permian. Obituaries. Ramon Acosta Sr. Ramon Acosta Sr. of Midland, Texas, passed away on Wednesday, October 5th. A celebration of his life was held October 8th. Interment followed at Rest Haven North Cemetery. Ramon was born on April 16, 1936, in Fort Davis, Texas, to parents George and Petra Acosta. Ramon is survived by his three sons, Tony Guyton of Lubbock, Ramon Acosta of Salina, Felipe Acosta of Midland, and one daughter, Mary Morales, also of Midland. He had 8 grandchildren and 11 great-grandchildren. Ramon is preceded in death by his wife, Rebecca Acosta, his parents, George and Petra Acosta, and brothers, Pete and Trinidad. Arrangements were under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Roger Harris Fleckenstein. Roger Harris Fleckenstein, 83, of Stanton, passed away Thursday, October 6, 2022. Funeral services will be held at 1 o'clock p.m., Monday, October 10, 2022, at the First United Methodist Church of Stanton. Interment will follow at Evergreen Cemetery. Roger was born March 18, 1939, in Ranger, Texas, to Mary Frances Granger and Edwin Regis Fleckenstein. He is survived by his wife, Faye Fleckenstein, one son, Ricky Fleckenstein, and daughter, Cheryl Cook. He is also survived by 4 grandchildren and 7 great-grandchildren. He was preceded in death by his parents, one sister, Anita Montgomery, and a great-granddaughter, Katie Jo Cook. Arrangements are under the direction of Gilbreth Funeral Home in Stanton. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Dr. Dennis Glenn Van Nuys. Dr. Dennis Glenn Van Nuys of Midland died on September 30, 2022, in Midland, Texas. Funeral service will be held on October 10, 2022, at 2 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home. Burial immediately following at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland.
Hello, this is Cindy. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Saturday, October 8th. Oil-filled capital sorely needed. Investments haven't rebounded with demand, by Bob Campbell. Any way you look at it, the energy industry's upstream sector has been woefully underinvested for the past 7 or 8 years, and the problem looks to get worse and severely handicap the industry's ability to meet national and global needs between now and 2050. That's the conclusion of industry analysts, who say the situation is much more dire than has been generally recognized. Last year, J.P. Morgan identified a $600 billion shortfall of upstream investment that will be needed by 2030 to meet what the bank called a muted view of global oil demand, said Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners President Ed Longenecker. According to analytics company Wood Mackenzie, even under an accelerated energy transition scenario to reach a 2 degrees Celsius global warming limit pathway, $7.5 trillion of upstream investment will still be needed by 2050 to meet energy demand. Longenecker said West Texas' financially stable independents are still driving production in the Permian Basin, but that could taper off next year as exploration and production companies grapple with a variety of challenges, including workforce shortages, the rising cost of goods and services, and a hostile federal policy environment. Texas producers remain the most resilient and innovative in the world, and they will do all they can. But it's critical that policymakers stop politicizing our energy security and develop a coherent strategy to support long-term investments in energy infrastructure and domestic production, he said Wednesday from Austin. At the 2021 Financial Times Commodities Global Summit, Trafigura's co-head of oil trading, Ben Lukoc, said the underinvestment is real and that in the last 7 years, two-thirds of the E&P budget of the world has been lost. And in September, J.P. Morgan's chief executive officer, Jamie Dimon, said divesting from oil and gas would pave the road to hell for America. Trafigura is a global commodities trading and logistics firm. The upstream is the E&P that goes on in the basin, while the midstream is the pipelines and the downstream are refineries. Permian Basin Petroleum Association Executive Director Stephen Robertson reported Thursday that a December 2021 report by the International Energy Forum and IHS Markit said the global underinvestment was 30% lower than in 2020 and 23% lower than in 2021, despite the global demand having rebounded to near 2019 levels. This accounted for $115 billion less in global oil and gas sector funding in 2021 alone compared to 2019, Robertson said. The reasons are many and varied, but they have one common theme, instability. The reasons are price volatility, proposed and actual changes in government regulations, inconsistent long-term demand predictions, the war in Ukraine, inflation and inconsistencies or lack of standardization in environmental, social, and governance criteria, all of which are driving up capital costs and diminishing interest in investment for long-cycle resource development. Robertson said the underinvestment's impact, everything that goes into drilling and completing a well, simple and complex equipment, machinery, employees, training, and raw materials, it's highly likely that a lack of investment in the development of oil and gas assets will lead to the use of higher polluting energy sources around the world, such as wood and coal, which is very counter to the purported environmental desire of those working toward the end of our industry, he said. The solution is a stable regulatory environment coupled with a national acknowledgement that oil and gas resources are vital for energy security. This would encourage and support increased investment in oil and natural gas long-cycle projects, even with the other volatility that still remains in the world. While changes now would impact capital investment and field operations, they would not have an instantaneous impact on production. Any increase in investment over the next 2 years would likely be recognized in increased production within the next 5 to 6 years. Waco economist Ray Perriman reported a definite desire for more capital for upstream development of late. Production has reached record levels for both oil and gas, Perriman said. On the other hand, if you ask those who are wanting to develop more acreage, they will obviously want more capital. The idea of overinvestment to some people implies investments that should have happened, but didn't. In reality, what's going on in the Permian Basin is the amount of investment that the market will presently support. There are many reasons why this amount is less than many would like to see. First, the investment picture must be viewed within the context of the entire current and expected future economic picture. Oil companies are facing demands by shareholders and other investors for better returns. Before the pandemic, the economist said, a lot of profit was reinvested in expanded drilling and production, with the net result being a less than pleasing return to investors. As a result, many major fund managers moved away from energy investments, he said. The situation was made worse by the removal of upstream oil companies from major market indices like the Dow Jones, which provided managers with an ability to attain return benchmarks without including energy equities. In addition, the move toward ESG investing led many major players away from fossil fuel investments. I think that decision was misguided in some ways, but it has nonetheless been a reality. Perriman said the other big issue has been federal policy that makes drilling more difficult and midstream and downstream investments more problematic. It's also increasing uncertainty about the long-term outlook, which can dampen the appetite of investors, he said. Perriman said companies weigh those factors along with supply chain and workforce challenges and the war in Ukraine while formulating their drilling programs. If you only look at prices and profitability without the need for capital or the risk of future policy limitations, there are certainly locations that could be drilled and wells that could be developed, he said. The sooner policymakers in Washington accept the inescapable reality, the better. Local news roundup. Odessa couple arrested on drug charges. Odessa Police Department detectives found 45 grams of cocaine while executing a search warrant Wednesday and made two arrests. According to an OPD report, detectives with the intelligence unit investigating a narcotics case obtained a search warrant for the 900 block of North Lauderdale Avenue. While executing the search, they found Pete Carrasco, 41, next to his vehicle in the alley, and in his backpack they found two guns and more than 20 grams of cocaine. In the house, detectives found more than 25 grams of cocaine and 5 ounces of marijuana. Carrasco admitted to distributing the drugs, and a woman inside the house, Lupita Madrid, 46, admitted to possessing the drugs so they could be distributed. Both were arrested on suspicion of manufacturing or delivering of a controlled substance, 4 grams to 200 grams, and possession of marijuana, 4 ounces to 5 pounds. The controlled substance charge is a first-degree felony charge punishable by a prison sentence of 5 years to life. The marijuana charge is a state jail felony punishable by a prison sentence of 6 months to 2 years. Carrasco and Madrid remained in the Ector County Jail as of Friday. His bonds have been set at $74,000, and hers are set at $64,000. Odessan accused of theft. An Odessa man was arrested Wednesday after being accused back in July of stealing a truck and breaking into a house while out on bond in a theft of property case. According to Ector County Sheriff's Office reports, an employee with Ranger Energy Services on West Murphy Street called deputies on July 19th and reported a Ford F-550 had been stolen. Deputies spotted the truck on July 26th, pulling into a business on Farm to Market 1936, but the driver fled. One day earlier, a woman had called the sheriff's office to report she saw a man identified as William Boyd Simmons Jr., 42, prying a door open at her uninhabited residence on West Hubnick Road via her security cameras. She told deputies that when she arrived at the home, she saw Simmons and another man who had been inside the house leave. She also discovered tools and an air compressor were missing from the house and a storage shed. On July 29th, deputies identified Simmons as the man who stole the Ford pickup, and deputies sought warrants for Simmons' arrest on August 8th in both cases. Simmons was arrested Wednesday on unauthorized use of a vehicle and burglary of a building, both of which are state jail felonies punishable by a prison term of 6 months to 2 years. He was booked into the Ector County Jail on those charges and a failure to appear for a warrant in a 2021 theft of property cause case. In that case, Simmons is accused of stealing two pickup trucks, an MG convertible, an ATV, and various tools. Altogether, the property is valued at somewhere between $30,000 and $150,000. Simmons is being held without bond in the theft case and on surety bonds totaling $5,000 in more recent cases. Obituaries and death notices from the Odessa American for Saturday. Barbara Jean Cowling Talbert, age 86, passed from this life on Wednesday, October 5th, at her daughter's home in Odessa. She was born in Seagraves, Texas, on Wednesday, August 26, 1936, to the late John D. and Thelma Pascal Oates Cowling. Those left to cherish her love and memory include her daughter Tina Good Kennedy and husband Rick of Odessa, son Mike Talbert of Missouri, 13 grandchildren and 17 great-grandchildren, as well as several extended family members and numerous friends. Barbara was preceded in death by her parents, daughter Brenda Fuentes, brother Ernest Nathan, son Allie, and sister Billy Jo Rankin. No services will be held at this time. Arrangements are entrusted to the Acres West Funeral Chapel, and condolences to the family may be sent online at acreswestfuneral.com. Linda Sue Woods. Linda Sue Woods was born on June 26, 1941, in Grand Falls, Texas, and she was called home on Monday, October 3rd. She is survived by her children, Johnny Harris and his wife, Tammy, of Odessa, Susie Ellis and Robert Wilson of Odessa. Her grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Linda was preceded in death by her husband, Ralph Woods, parents Minnie and Lawton Cox, brothers Durd, Norman, and Butch, and her sisters Dixie, Barbara, and Leora. Funeral services will be held Saturday, October 8th at 10:30 a.m. at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home, followed by interment at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Naomi Jane Whatley Carter was born in Big Spring, Texas on April 5, 1934. She passed away in Odessa on August 24th. Her parents were Junius Benjamin Whatley and Eunice Corrine Fall Whatley. Jane was preceded in death by her parents and all of her siblings, her brothers Carl, Kenneth, and Richard Whatley, and her sisters Betty Whatley, Dorothy King, and Helen Leathers. She is also preceded in death by her daughter, Brenda Tompkins. June is survived by her children, Nancy Portwood of Odessa, her son-in-law, Rod Tompkins of Kelso, Washington, Shirley McBee and spouse Keith of Odessa, and Bobby Carter and spouse Karen of St. Charles, Missouri. She is also survived by her grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Memorial services will be held at the Stomping Grounds in Odessa on Saturday, October 15th at 5 p.m. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel, and condolences may be sent to the family online at acreswestfuneral.com. Barbara Durden, 70, a longtime resident of Odessa, sadly left us on October 3rd. She was born to the late Joseph and Erna Rodulovic in St. Louis, Missouri, on March 22, 1952. Barbara is preceded in death by her parents. Barbara is survived by her husband, Billy Wayne Durden, her children, Jessica Lance and husband, Daryl of Brownwood, Texas, and Matthew Overlay and wife, Nathana of Midland, as well as her grandchildren. There will be a private ceremony with only close family members present. Roy Roundtree, 89, of Midland, died on October 5th at Midland Medical Lodge. Visitation will be held from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Monday, October 10th, at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home in Midland. A service will be held at 10 a.m. Tuesday, October 11th, at Evergreen Cemetery Chapel in Stanton. Roy was born on August 14, 1933, in Ada, Oklahoma. Survivors include two sons, David Roundtree of Midland and Michael Roundtree of Wickett, one daughter, Penny Sebert, and husband Terry of Midland, five grandchildren and numerous great-grandchildren. He was preceded in death by his parents, two brothers, his wife of 53 years, Mildred, one grandson, and one daughter-in-law. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Eusebio Sanchez Luna, 78, of Odessa, died Tuesday, October 4th, in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Wednesday, October 12th, at Acres West 24-Hour Chapel. Interment follows at Odessa 2 Garden section of Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Kay Rhodes, 91, of Odessa, died Wednesday, October 5th, in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, October 29th, at Connection Christian Church. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. The family will receive friends for visitation Friday, October 28th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the funeral home. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. Lydia S. Rodriguez, 76, of Odessa, died Thursday, October 6th, in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 1 p.m. on Tuesday, October 11th, at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Burial will follow at the Rose Hill section of Ector County Cemetery. The family will receive friends for visitation on Monday, October 10th, from 5 to 9 p.m., with a rosary at 7 p.m. at the funeral home. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. Luis Martin Kung Fu Rodriguez, 57, of Midland, died Monday, October 3rd, in Lubbock. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Tuesday, October 11th, at St. Mary's Catholic Church of Odessa. Burial will follow at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Dr. Dennis Glenn Van Nick, 73, of Midland, died Friday, September 30th, in Midland. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m., October 10th, at American Heritage Funeral Home. Burial immediately following at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery, Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Sean Lee Babcock, 44, of Midland, died Monday, October 3rd, in Midland. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.